Good morning. Dear committee, dear all other audience, welcome to Pangaea Pandey's doctoral trial lecture. The trial lecture is the first part of the public defense. Before the dissertation defense can take place, the evaluation committee will take the decision regarding the approval of the trial lecture. And this approval, hopefully, will be announced at 12:30 in this very room today. If the trial lecture is approved, the defense will start immediately after. My name is Nils Kalstad-Svensen. I'm the Dean of NTNU's Faculty of Computer Science and Media Technology, and I'll conduct this public defense. I would also like to present to you the member of the evaluation committee. The first external opponent is Professor Wim van Rembergen from the Information System Management Group at the University of Antwerp, Belgium. Welcome. The second external opponent is Dr. Janne Hagen from the Norwegian Water Resources and Energy Directorate, NVE. Welcome. And the internal opponent and administrator of the committee's work is Professor Stuart Kowalski from our very own faculty. The title of the trial lecture, which is given to you by Pitch 2 weeks ago, is Security and Insecurity with Open Source Software, Past, Present and Future. Please, thank you. The floor is
yours for the next 45 minutes. Thank you. Thank you, Nils, for the introduction. Good morning, everyone. My name is Pankaj Pandey, and I'm a doctoral candidate at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology in Gjøvik, Norway, and at the University of Antwerp in Belgium, for the award of dual PhD degree in information security and applied economics from the respective institutions. And in the partial fulfillment of my doctoral defense, I have been assigned the trial lecture topic of security and insecurity with open source software, past, present and future. So in this presentation, I'll first explain the open source concept and then the open source software itself, then covering the security and insecurity aspect of open source software. So this presentation is structured like this. I'll start with an introduction to the open source software, then evolution of open source software, growth and importance of OSS, security challenges, security benefits and limitations of OSS, then briefly discussing the legal perspective associated with the use of open source software, future of OSS, and conclude the presentation with the conclusion on the same. So, in a summer season like it is in Norway currently, soft drinks like Coca-Cola are widely used by the people to beat the heat. And as we all are aware that the recipe of Coca-Cola is a closely guarded trade secret. That is, the consumers do not know about the ingredients and their composition used in the Coca-Cola drink. On the other hand, we have a product called Open Cola. And Open Cola is a product for which the recipe is published and shareable among the consumers. So consumers know all about the ingredients of this drink, and they can take a decision with regards to the consumption of this drink. And this drink was launched on the 27th of January 2001 with the version 1, and currently it's version 1.1.3 is in the market. Now, in case if you are wondering about the relationship between these drinks and open source software, then let me tell you that this drink, Open Cola, was actually launched by a Toronto-based open source software firm called Open Cola, and it was launched as a marketing strategy to promote their software called Open Cola. And the Cola here stands for Collaboration Object Lookup Architecture. Though the company does not exist anymore, but this drink in itself was a huge success, so that it continued on itself selling in the market. Now, if you map this whole concept of Coca-Cola and then Open Cola to the field of open source software, then we have a product called closed source software. And the properties of closed source software are like, if you map exactly to the from the Coca-Cola, then the recipe, that is the source code, is not available to the users or consumers. The software cannot be modified, unlike it is in case of Open Cola, and it cannot be redistributed. So these are some properties associated with the closed source software. And then if you look at this figure, there is a software vendor called SV, there is a customer called C1, and a customer called C2. So So to use the software developed by SV, C1 purchases the license for the software by paying a dollar amount. And for this payment, the customer gets the binary file, which is an executable file to be used by this customer. But the problem is that this customer cannot redistribute that file to, or the software to the any other customer. Secondly, the customer has no access to the source code, so he cannot modify the source file. And in lieu of this payment, the customer gets the support in terms of patches and support from the software vendor. Plus, if the customer wants any specific request, has specific request for the features, then they can submit a feature request, support request, or if they find a bug related to the application of software, they can submit a bug report. On the other hand, in case of an open source software, we can see that in the same type of scenario, the software vendor, to use the software developed by a software vendor, the customer one gets the license from the software vendor, but the software is free of cost. There is no dollar fee associated with the open source software. The customer gets the license to use it and redistribute it, which was not possible in case of a closed source software. So the C1 can redistribute it to C2. C1 can use it for its own purpose and has access to the source file. Because when the license is agreed on, they get the binary file as well as the source file, source code. So they can modify the source code, read it, and redistribute it. And furthermore, the customer has a privilege to report the bugs to the software vendor or fix it directly because they have the source code. They can submit a support request or solve the problem directly. Lastly, they can submit a feature implementation request or do modify the code as per their specific requirements. So a key point here to note is that all the open source softwares are free, but not all free softwares are open source. So there's a distinction between the free software and open source software. But these three properties are not enough to call a call in software as an open source software, because the Open Source Initiative, which is a non-for-profit organization, they have identified 10 criteria that must be fulfilled to call a software as an open source software. And these criteria are this. First, the software should be available for free redistribution, source code readability, derived works, integrity of the source code, no discrimination against the persons or groups participating in the project, no discrimination against the fields of endeavor, that is, the software can be used for commercial application, personal application, and so on, so there is no restriction. Distribution of license, license must not be specific to a product, license must not restrict other software, and license must be technology neutral. So I'm not going into detail of these criteria, but these bullet points are self-explanatory to a great extent. So before I proceed with the benefits or limitations or security aspect of open source software, let us look at the evolution of open source software, how it evaluated and how it started with. So in the history of open source software goes back to the 1950s at least. In 1950s, the IBM released the source code for its operating system. And then in 1955, the Share user group at IBM, they released the open source for the Share operating system. Further, then in 1980s, the there was a platform called Bulletin Board Systems, and a variety of softwares with the availability of source code were available at these bulletin boards. Then in 1983, Richard Stallman, who is a well-known figure in the field of open source software and is usually called as RMS, he started a project called GNU Project to develop a Unix-like operating system with the concept of having all the freely available source code to the users for the operating system. And in 1985, then he started a free software foundation to promote the open source softwares, which later led to the initiative of Open Source Initiative. In 1987, by the June of 87, there was this project, GNU Project. It was successful in developing an assembler, a portable, and many other applications with the open source concept. And in the later of this June 87, this GNU program developed initial kernel software compiler needed for program development and other applications. So this was all available with this source code. In 1991, a guy called Linus Torvalds, he was studying this project, some course related to Minix, and this was an operating system like Unix, but he was unable to access the source code for this because it was not available. So he decided to develop a new operating system like Unix, but the concept was that the source code should be available to the public, and he started this project. Then in by the on the suggestion of Ari Lemeke, he renamed this project to Linux, because initially he called this as a Freaks project. So this is how the applications and the availability of source code related to Unix operating system continued until 1991. Then around 1993, there was a litigation between USL, that is the Unix Systems Laboratories, and Berkeley Software Design in 1992, related to some intellectual property with the Unix operating system. And this litigation resulted in the free release of FreeBSD and NetBSD, which are a Unix-like operating system, in 1993. Then by the 1995, there were some forked out versions of this software. And in 1998, around 1997, Eric Raymond, he published, coined the term open source, because before this, this term open source was not used. So, and in 1998, Netscape Communicator released the source code for the internet via mozilla.org. In 1998, there was a summit organized by the technical publisher O'Reilly, and the summit was called Freeware Summit. However, later this was renamed as Open Source Conference after this. Eric in 1997 coined the term open source. And in 1998, this open source initiative was born, which is currently leading the projects related to open source softwares. Between 90s and 2000s, there were a number of coding languages were created. And these languages are not open source languages, but they contributed significantly to the development of open source projects. In 2005, DVCS, a distributed version control system called GitHub, was launched, and by the 2008, it became the leading DVCS platform, and with over 3.4 million users, 3 million code repositories, and so on. So, and then the source code for the Java was released around the 2007, and between 2008 to 14, there was a lot of development related to the Android operating systems and its source code. And the current situation between 2015 to 2016 is like, there has been a lot of development related to the open source for the blockchain technologies and other applications. In 2015, there is a company called Ethereum. They launched a distributed autonomous organization, and they released the source code for the same. And recently, in June 2016, IBM has released the source code for its blockchain application related to the financial technology domain. So if you look at the whole episode of evolution of open source software, there are millions of open source applications available in the market, and some of the prominent applications are like this, such as Mozilla, and then this is a browser, then there are a number of operating systems, Android, Ubuntu, and so on. So these are just some of the selected applications of open source software. And the growth and importance of OSS is reflected or can be visualized in this graph. By the 2007, there were only 100,000 open source projects available in the market, and then it reached to the level of 1.5 million by the 2015. So this is based on a survey conducted by the Black Duck Software, which is a leading organization in the field of open source security analysis and conducting surveys related to the open source projects. And according to Gartner, which is a research organization related to technology evolution, they said that by the 2016, open source software will be included in mission critical applications within 99% of global enterprises. So all these figures indicate that there is a continuous growth in the use and development of open source softwares. So according to another survey by the Black Duck Softwares, there was a growth of 2 times between the year 2010 to 2015 in the use of open source software for business environment. So this growth was 2 times between these 5 years. Then 78% of the companies surveyed were running open source. That is, these companies were using open source software to some extent, partially or completely, for their business operations. And only less than 3% companies were found, those who were not using open source software in any way. Then almost 65% of the companies were using open source software in 2016, compared to the 60% of companies using it in 2015. So it is based on 2 surveys. One was conducted in 2015, the reference 7, and then the reference 8 is from the survey conducted in 2016. Then 65% of the companies were contributing to open source in 2016, compared to 63% in 2015. So it's that the companies using open source in 2016 is 65%. Also, companies contributing to the development of open source in 2016 is 65%. But it's important to look at the key reasons which have contributed to the growth of open source softwares in this whole period of development and evolution. So there are five key reasons. First is the openness. That is, the open availability of source code makes it easy for the users to customize it for their specific requirements and assess the risk related to the use of that particular open source software. There is another reason related to the growth is the flexibility. That is, the functions related to the open source software can be customized. The functions which are not required can be removed, or any function which is required from that software can be included in that software. Then the third concept is of speed. As the open source softwares are developed in a distributed environment with a large number of developers and researchers participating in those projects, so this helps in speedy development of the software project, as well as fixing any vulnerability or releasing patches associated with that. Then the fourth concept is of standards. Standards means that as it's developed in a distributed environment, and all the code submitted for the project is a kind of peer reviewed. So a minimum set of standards are maintained to ensure that the code submitted for that project are easily readable and usable by all other community members. Then the last factor is total cost of ownership. As there is no cost to be paid for the use of that software or to download that software, users can freely download it, use it for their requirements. So the total cost of ownership is minimized compared to closed source softwares or proprietary softwares. So the importance of open source softwares for the organizations is reflected in these figures. Like 66% of the companies said that in 2015 they were using open source software for speedy application development, compared to 42% using it in 2010, which means that the companies in 2015 were using a part of open source software in their proprietary software development to speedily deliver the applications to their customers. Then there was a concept about 58% of the companies believe that open source provides greater ability to scale. So it enables them to scale the project to a great extent. Then 43% of the companies believe that open source provides superior ease of deployment. And it was found that 55% of the companies, they believe open source delivers superior security. And 61% of the companies said that the superior security of open source is expected to rise in the next 2 to 3 years period. So on one hand, we have so much of growth and development and innovation related to the open source softwares. On the other hand, this growth and increase in its adoption poses several security challenges. So let's look at the security challenges posed by the open source software. The key problem here is that security and management practices have not kept pace with the exponential growth in adoption of open source software. And as is reflected in this graph, in 2015, the total number of vulnerabilities found in the open source software were more than 8,000. And if you look at the first quarter of 2016, that is first 3 months, January, February, and March, about 960 new vulnerabilities were found in the open source softwares. And this is an increase of 20% compared to the first quarter of 2015. And almost 35% of the vulnerabilities discovered were of high and critical nature. So the security issues in open source software is growing day by day. If you look at the recently developed some of the major vulnerabilities in open source softwares, there is one called Heartbleed, and it is the only vulnerability in this table which was discovered in 3 years from the time it was introduced. But all other vulnerabilities, like this one, Shellshock, this took almost 25 years. This one took 25, 25, 15, 11 years. So there is a huge gap between the introduction of a vulnerability and its discovery and patching, release of a patch to deal with that vulnerability. And nobody knows that if these vulnerabilities were exploited within this period gap of discovery and in their introduction to the software. So if you look at the current state of open source software, in an analysis conducted by the Black Duck Software on a variety of open source applications, they found that 67% of the applications contained known open source vulnerabilities. The keyword here is known. That is, the vulnerabilities which are already known to the community, they were still existing in the 67% of the applications. Then the 40% of these known vulnerabilities were of severe nature. That is, they could have a potential huge impact on adverse impact on the companies using them. And it took more than 5 years, it was the average age of the known open source software vulnerabilities. That is the vulnerabilities which have been known for more than 5 years, they were still existing in those applications which were analyzed. Then 22.5 is the average number of open source vulnerabilities in each application. And almost 10% of the applications reviewed still contained the Heartbleed vulnerability. And this was an analysis conducted in early 2016 or late 2015, so it's not an too old analysis. So if you look at the way the companies are handling these vulnerabilities, almost one third of the companies that were surveyed, they had no process for identification, tracking or remediation of known open source vulnerabilities. So on one hand, we see that the companies are increasingly using the open source software for their speedy development of application and things like that, but they have no dedicated team to look for these things. More than half of the companies said they do not have anyone with the responsibility of identifying and tracking the remediation. So even if a patch is released for Heartbleed vulnerability or anything like that, they don't have anyone to track and fix the patch or fix the vulnerability. And less than 17% companies were disclosing vulnerabilities responsibly with more than 1 month to fix the exposure. So still it's a huge gap. That almost, more than 50% of the companies were openly announcing vulnerabilities or providing no disclosure at all. So these kind of things clearly indicate there is a lack of coordination between the open source software users and developers, and vulnerabilities keep on being released in the, being used in the open source softwares and they are not fixed at an early stage. So a classic example of this kind of vulnerability exploitation is the Panama Papers, a recent release. There is a company called Mossack Fonseca, which is a Panama Island-based company, and it provides financial and legal services to their international clients. This company was recently hacked, and 11.5 million confidential documents were stolen, which is almost 2.6 terabytes of data. And it is suspected that the attackers could hack the enter to the system of this organization because of these three softwares they use. They were using Drupal 7.23, which is a 2013 version, and it was known to have 611 known vulnerabilities, which the company did not fix. Then there was another software called WordPress 4.1, a version of 2014, and it was known to have 435 known vulnerabilities. This was not fixed. Then they were using Outlook Web Access, and there was an unpatched since 2009, and the company was attacked in 2015. So there is a gap of again 6 years, or more than 6 years, and they were not using any encryption. So the point is that if you are using an open source software without doing a risk assessment of using that software or patching the known vulnerabilities at an earliest possible time, then you are exposing yourself to the serving yourself to the hackers. And a recent example of is of Ethereum exploit, like I mentioned about the Ethereum project. And it's an open source project which was launched in 2015. This is a project based on blockchain technology. They are developing a distributed autonomous organization to use smart contracts for a variety of applications in the financial industry, insurance, agriculture, weather, and so on. And this is a snapshot from their website, which says that without any possibility of downtime, censorship, fraud, or third-party interference, yet they were hacked in, they were actually a vulnerability which was known to the community for a long time. Like here, a number of researchers had reported this vulnerability, but this was not patched. The developers did not look at this vulnerability and they kept it dragging. So an hacker decided to exploit it, and this vulnerability was exploited in June. The result is that they lost $53 million, which is one third of their capital. And this figure is based on the exchange rate which is available after the hack. If you look at the exchange rate before the hack, it's worth $80 million. So it's like half of their capital is gone in just one hack. In fact, it's not right to call it hack. It's an exploitation of a vulnerability which was known to the open source community. It was reported to the developers, yet they did not take appropriate action to fix it. So in the wake of all these high profile breaches, it's important to take to emphasize more on the security aspect of open source software. And in these attacks and recent developments related to open source software have been reflected in the interest of companies or motivation of companies participating in the open source software. Like in 2015, the motivation for companies participating in the open source software projects was like this. The first was to reduce the development cost, then competitive advantage and alignment with the company mission and values. However, in 2016, this has shifted to the level of fixing bugs or adding functionality. So their priority now is to fix the bugs before they can use the open source software or it is served to the open source community. The state of OSS vulnerability management currently is like this. 67% of the companies are now participating in the open source software projects to fix the bugs or add functionality, which is a drastic shift from their interest in 2015. Then 41% of the vulnerabilities are detected and remediated manually. 10% are detected through third parties. That is, if you don't have a dedicated team or in-house talent to search for the vulnerabilities or fix them, the third parties are involved, like Black Duck or Coventry and many other companies. And then 19% of the vulnerabilities are detected and remediated automatically. So the point is that on one hand, we have a huge growth in the open source software. On the other hand, we have a security challenges in the open source software. But it's not that it's a completely risky business or a very or a drastic business. So the point is that there are certain benefits which are imparted by the open source software, and these benefits are related to security in particular. So the point is that in a survey it was found that 46% of the companies give first consideration to the open source software for security technologies. So at least there is a huge trust on the open source software. Then 55% of the companies said that the open source delivers superior security. And these arguments are based on two these arguments can be substantiated by this graph. In this chart, there is a comparison of vulnerabilities or the vulnerability of open source software compared to the all vulnerable products. And it is found that almost 50% of OSS are among the vulnerable products. So it's neither a great result nor a bad result. So it's a so-so result where 50% of the open source softwares are vulnerable. On the other hand, this chart, we see that the percentage of vulnerabilities in open source softwares is increasing. From 2000, where it was a little over 20%, in 2014 it's almost 80%. So the number of vulnerabilities in open source softwares is increasing on a yearly basis. But the benefits offered by the open source softwares can be categorized into two parts. That one is many eyeballs phenomena, and the second is modifications. Many eyeballs means there are a large number of users, developers, and researchers who can look for the vulnerabilities in the software, as well as they can contribute to the fix that vulnerabilities. And the modifications aspect looks at modifying the software so as to meet the specific security requirements of that organization. In many eyeballs the concept is based on the security through obscurity is not enough on its own. So the point is that if you hide the source code, that is not enough in itself to prevent any potential exploitation. And if the source code is released in the public, then no one can sneak in. That is, people will actively look for any backdoor or Trojan attempts in that software. The third point is that many eyeballs guarantee security and stability of algorithms. That is, those who are participating in that product, they can assess the usefulness of that software in meeting the functional requirements as is specified in the objective of that software. And users, developer researchers can discover bugs, submit bug reports, and patch bugs. So the point is that as there are a large number of people, they can easily identify the bugs. They can or if they are not capable of fixing that, they can submit a bug report or patch the bugs. The security of algorithm and code can be verified. Then the risks are known to the user. If you buy a software from a proprietary software, you are unaware of the possible vulnerabilities in that software or the risk associated with using that software. However, if you decide to use an open source software, you can do a risk assessment related to using that software, and you can know in advance about the vulnerabilities that may exist in that software. So based on that discovery, either you can decide to fix that vulnerability or use the software as it is, but you are aware of the risk in using that software. The independent quality control mechanism is something which is a benefit provided by the open source software. Point is that if there are a large number of people involved in that project, they are supposed to be contributing to the vulnerability discovery and fixing that. So in a way, it provides a quality rating to the open source software. So if there is no vulnerability known today, it's assumed that there is no vulnerability in that software, at least as of now, because this has been vetted by all the other developers and researchers participating in that project. then the concept of distributed development is like is similar to the market phenomenon proposed by the Hayekian in economics, which means that the market based process wins over the command based structure, where the allocation of resources is more effective and efficient compared to a command based or a centralized structure. In case of modifications, the closed software forces the user to accept the level of security provided. So if you buy a software, you are forced to accept the security provided by the software. However, if you are successful in assessing the security level of that software, you can modify the software to meet your specific security level. If a critical infrastructure organization decides to use a software, they can assess the software, look for the vulnerabilities, and remove any functionality which they don't need. Then the end user of open source software can modify the software to meet the required level of security. Like I said, if you are the end user and you don't need any specific functionality, or you want to improve its security level, you can improve it and use it for your in-house purpose. Security critical entities can verify the software security. It's a kind of a risk assessment as well as the modification. And if a vulnerability is discovered, patch can be rolled out immediately. So if you have an in-house talent, you can discover the vulnerability and patch it immediately. Or at least you can request the project group to release a patch as soon as possible, which is not the case in case of closed source softwares or proprietary softwares developers, where the release of patch is pretty much dependent upon their interest and their business levels. Then this open source promotes incorporation of innovative functionality and application of the software. So like I said, the blockchain technology, which is now being used and applied to many other domains, it came as a Bitcoin, a cryptocurrency idea. Since the code was available to the public, now it is being used and experimented in a variety of dimensions. So these kind of things promote the innovation related to the open source software. Then there is a concept of underlying social structure here, is that the most of the users who are participating or producing the software, they overlap with the people or the users who use it. So the contributors and users overlap to a great extent. So the product produced is likely to be of better quality compared to a closed source software or proprietary software. And any unused functionality may add any risk. So if there is a generic software with 10 functionalities and you only need 8 specific, you have this requirements related to 8 functionalities, you can decide to remove the rest of the 2. So as to ensure that there is no unused functionality that may add any risk to your business operations. And with these benefits, then there are two key limitations associated with the open source software. First is security through obscurity, and second is amateurs versus professionals. So the point is that why not use an open source software is for this reason: security through obscurity and amateurs versus professionals. Point is that if nobody knows a vulnerability, then that cannot be exploited probably. So the concept here is that if you hide the source code, the time for the hacker or attacker increases to discover a vulnerability and exploit it. However, if you have released the source code, you are making his job easy. So this may lead to some exploitation, a quick exploitation, like it happened in Ethereum case, which I just described. The vulnerability was published online. It was known to the community, and one guy decided to exploit that, and they lost 80 millions. So point is security through obscurity. Then in open source, any unpatched vulnerability can be exploited, like in case of Ethereum. The vulnerability was known, but the developers decided not to patch it quickly. They were too slow to respond, and in the meantime, it was exploited. Then many users and reviewers do not guarantee more security. So though there are a large number of people participating in that project, users, developers, and researchers, but they all might not be qualified and skilled enough to discover a vulnerability or fix it. Then the closed source softwares have better patch pushing methods. If you are using a proprietary software, you automatically get the patch, and if you are working in a centralized controlled organization, the patch will automatically be updated to your system. But this is not the case with open source softwares, and this is the reason why vulnerabilities keep on pending for more than 5 years before they are patched. Then the second concept is of amateurs versus professionals. That is, maybe many eyes, but not all are qualified. The people participating in open source softwares come from a diverse background: students, professionals, freelancers, and so on. So they all may not have the same level of skills and knowledge required to develop a software and do its security testing and fix the vulnerabilities. Then the software vendors have dedicated security teams. So if you are purchasing a software from Microsoft, IBM or anybody else, they have a dedicated security team who test the softwares, and then the software is released to the market. So you can assume that they have done the testing better than the open source community. Then the third point is that the open source developers may not know how to protect against common vulnerabilities, because the best software engineering practices might not be known to these developers, and the casual development approach may lead to some kind of vulnerability. Then it can give false sense of security. That is, you assume that a large number of people are participating in this project, and you assume that they might have looked for all the vulnerabilities and fixed it, but that might not be true. They might not have looked at all the vulnerabilities, they might not have tested in a very thorough manner, so it's highly likely that some vulnerabilities are still left in the software. So the assumption based on that a large number of people have reviewed it is not very correct here. Then if a failure of trust occurs, then it may have a major negative or economic consequences. Point is that if a large open source software is used or it's a high value software, then if it's exploited, then the trust is broken and it may have a negative consequences. Again, I'll go back to the example of Ethereum, where there is a discussion going on to drop the project and scrap it completely, just because they lost $80 million due to the reason of known vulnerabilities which they could not patch in a very responsible manner. So with these benefits and limitations associated with open source software, there is another angle, which is a legal perspective. Legal angle is not directly a technological security angle, but it does lead to some security related issues. And there are two main factors here. One is, okay, so before I go to that, let's look at the commonly used open source softwares. Open source softwares are used on the basis of licenses, and licensees use these softwares subjected to the terms of the license. They can make and distribute the copies of software and build upon the software to modify or enhance the source code. And some of the popularly used open source licenses are these. But all these licenses do not share the same strategies or terms and conditions. They may they vary to a great extent in with regards to the use of open source software. And some of the commonly used software licenses are this. So if you look at this chart, the three criteria, which is free, that is free of cost, redistribution, and no usage restriction, are fulfilled by all these licenses which are here. But all other criteria, such as free source code, is not fulfilled by all the softwares. It's not fulfilled by the freeware. Then the concept of code modification is not allowed in freeware. Free derived work is not permitted in the public domain license type. And link with proprietary software is not allowed in the freeware as well as in the GPL license. However, some of these licenses enable you to use the open source software for your proprietary software development. And this leads to the legal challenge of patent troll. The point is that if there is a non-practicing entity with the sole focus of using leverage to extract money from the alleged infringer. So this is one aspect. Then there is another aspect, which is copyright troll. And this is the developer who is acting outside of open source community norms to extract money based on the compliance failure. So like if you go back to the previous chart on the licenses associated with the open source software, if a software does not if a license does not permit you to use the open source software, open source code for a proprietary development or vice versa, then that may lead to the copyright issues. And the popular case in this area is of Oracle versus Google. This was a case, there have been several cases. There was a case between Microsoft and Netscape and many others, but I have selected this case because it was recently settled. So the litigation came over the issue of copyright and patent protection related to the Java API, and which was used by Google in Android operating systems. So the point was that the matter was taken to the district court in USA in 2012, which ordered in favor of Google. However, this decision was challenged by Oracle in 2015 in the US Courts of Appeals for the Federal Circuit CFC. And in 2015, this court reversed the order, and they ordered in favor of Oracle. So then in April 2016, CEOs of both the companies, they had a meeting to settle the matter, but the matter remained unsettled. It was not settled by the mutual consent. Then in May 2016, that is just almost one month back, the trial jury ordered in favor of Google. And they said that the use of open source software that is related to Java API in Android operating system was a fair use. So all these challenges and things pose several security issues as well. Because if you are blindly using an open source code in your application, then there are security aspects as well as legal aspects as well. So the future of open source software depends on several aspects: its benefits, its growth, its security limitations, its legal and regulatory aspects, and so on. So the key factors which I think may affect the future of open source software and security are its property of distributed model of security assurance and certification. So it's like that as the software or the source code is peer reviewed by a large number of people participating in that project. Okay, the assumption is that the project is large. If it's a small project, there might not be many participants in that project. So in a way, it's an indirect rating of that software, that the quality is checked and it meets to a certain level of security. Then the extensibility and flexibility of the model. So the future will also depend on the extensibility and flexibility, which is ensured, provided, and improved by the open source community. The third factor is foundation for community-centered social innovation. The social innovation is again like the growth, development, and its novel applications related to blockchain, Internet of Things, financial technologies, and so on. Then the economic viability of open source model. It's important that there is a consistent business model surrounding the open source software, otherwise it may not grow to a great extent in the future. And I think Red Hat Linux had recently reached the level of $1 billion, which was an open source project. So things like this, which ensure the economic viability of the project, are relevant for its future growth. Then the point is availability of competent contributors. So a key requirement for an open source is that there are people participating in the project who are skilled and knowledgeable enough to contribute to the project in a meaningful manner. So the availability of competent contributors will be key factor in its future growth. And there are certain incentives and motivation factors that may affect this requirement. Then the potential reactions and participation of commercial software vendors. Like I presented in previous slides that currently commercial software vendors are increasingly using the open source software. So it indicates their interest in using the open source software. But this may or may not be the case in the future. However, recently there was a news that Mozilla has started a fund dedicated to the discovery of vulnerabilities in open source softwares and patching those things. So initiatives like that will ensure that the security in open source softwares is tightened and the growth of open source software continues. Then there is a factor of emerging technology policy. So we have seen a lot of issues related to privacy laws in European Union and patent and litigation issues in US. So these things, if there is a technology policy which inhibits the application of a novel application of open source, like in case of blockchain or IoT or fintech, then the growth of the application of open source software may be inhibited. Then the legal and regulatory aspect, like intellectual property issues, patents, and copyrights, are highly likely to affect the application and growth of open source softwares. Then to conclude this presentation, open source makes the vulnerability discovery easy. It's a common point, common statement, which is used by those who are in favor of open source software or proponents of open source software, as well as those who are against. The easy vulnerability discovery will be helpful in patching it easily, as well as exploiting it easily. So it's a two double-edged sword. Then there is a factor of adoption of open source software is increasing, so is investment in open source vulnerability management. So the companies or the users are adopting open source software rapidly. At the same time, they are investing in the systematic discovery of vulnerabilities in these softwares and fixing them at the earliest possible scenario. Then companies' contribution to OSS open source software is increasing. So contribution in terms of vulnerability discovery, development, and so on. So this interest, if it continues, will be helpful for the open source or security ecosystem. Then the open source ecosystem creates ability to innovate around distributed technology model, like I mentioned about the blockchain and other related applications. Then the security risk in open source poses serious threat to the open source distributed technology. If there is a vulnerability, like in case of Ethereum, which can be exploited, then the whole concept or buzz around this application of this open source technology will be threatened. And then the legal and regulatory issues may inhibit the growth of open source adoption by the governments, by the commercial organizations, as well as the private entities. So thank you for your attention, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. Yep.
Well, just to ask you to think, Discovered By was a company for the people who have companies now there.
Discovered By, these are the people names here.
In the company's name.
Okay, this was Google. Oh. Sorry?
It's actually discovered by Protocol.
No, the Heartbleed was independently discovered by two companies. One was Google, and one was this Finnish company.
Yeah.
And Google reported it first. I think they were successful in reporting it 3 days in advance of that company. So the credit goes to. Yeah, I know. He came at a hick for the discussion. Yes, so they were second by 3 days. So they lost it. So,
in terms of the slide now, go back one more slide.
Yeah.
Don't go back. I'm missing the slide. My numbering is a little bit wrong. When you had the slide that had the different benefits with the openness and open source, etc. One thing that was missing from that was accountability.
Right. The liability factor.
Yes. Mm. Now, since you, it was quite interesting, since it overlaps your area in a sense, do you think one can outsource the liability in terms of predictive markets?
Right. No, I think a liability issue was looked by, liability issues in softwares was looked by several courts in US and UK, and it has been decided that you cannot fix a liability on a software developer because it's a different scheme than the the argument given in court was a comparison with the medical practitioners. So the point is that medical practitioners have a complete different strategy, while a software engineering field is a completely different thing. And here, fixing a liability on the developer, which is an individual or to an organization, may not be helpful in improving the security, or will inhibit the business growth.
Good that you gave the example of the medical profession, because I have friends that are doctors in the United States and Canada, and about a third of their cost goes to liability.
Insurance, right. And even the currently, which the software is developed and released by proprietary developers, there is a liability clause in their license, which says that they will cover a liability in X, Y, Z scenario, but will not do it in other scenarios. And which is the case that when there is an attack or exploitation, it usually falls outside that X, Y, Z criteria, which they decided to accept. One thing. Secondly, they have a limit on the liability that they can cover. So that limit is again a problematic issue, because the loss you may suffer is significantly higher than the liability which they are taking. So these issues are affecting this security strengthening thing. And I think I'll present it in my thesis point to increase that thing. So so
I have some more questions.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation.
Thank you. Closed software. Okay. In my view, the open source software strategy offers you an opportunity to look at the code and assess the critical factors in the code that may affect your operations. But this opportunity is not available in case of a proprietary software. So this is one factor which largely goes in favor of open source software. But then there is another factor, because if you don't have an inside in-house team that can look at it, then you need to outsource it. And in a way, you are again depending upon a third party, which may or may not be capable enough to give you the right output. So it's like you are again taking a software assessed and tested by a proprietary developer. So the difference between an open source software or the benefits offered by this software and the closed source mechanism are then not that much wider. So the opportunity which open source offers in terms of security assessment is then limited to the organizations who have an in-house team that can assess the vulnerabilities or functionalities in terms of their specific requirements. So in this in my presentation, I have tried to keep it a balanced presentation, neither in favor of OSS nor against OSS. And that is the reason I did not include some of the empirical studies which were published, because they were either too old or they were bending in favor of one side. So I have tried to keep it balanced, that I have not favored OSS nor against OSS, because this offers several benefits and several limitations. Same is the scenario with closed source software. So it is up to the organization or user to decide on which benefits they want, or which risk they are, or the which cost they are able to bear. So this is a key factor while deciding to select a software. Like in the survey, it was reported 55% or 56% of the companies said that they first look at an open source software when it comes to a decision related to security technologies. So point is that they trust open source software, or they have the flexibility to assess risk associated with its use. But this is not possible in case of most of the closed source softwares. Right. Attackers, right. 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 I think in future it will be a more clearly defined strategy will be used for open source softwares. Like currently, the most of the people participating in these projects are contributing in terms of development. But if you look at the example I gave about the Mozilla investment fund, and they are basically incentivizing people to contribute more towards the security related issues such as discovery of vulnerabilities and patching it. So this kind of participation and innovation related to motivating the participants with regards to different aspects of software engineering will help in improving the security. So currently there is no clearly defined role for people participating in that. So anybody can contribute in terms of development or security related issues. But if the team is clearly defined or divided in terms of roles, and the incentives related to that are provided, then the overall security can be improved in future at least.
I just have a wish. Can you turn to the first slide? I would like to make a picture of it.
Okay.
Well, just take the whole package and put it
all. Yeah.
I think this concludes all of the trial lecture. Thank you, Pankaj.
Thank you. Thank you.
There was also talking about pictures, the communication on the department of the PC
page. No, no, no. It's just my colleague.
Yes, but an additional picture from the communication department of the candidate and the committee now of the trial lecture.
I want to go into a bit more applied economics of the transaction cost theory.
how is it done? So
on side, I have to go again. I have to go again. I have to go again. I have to go again.